fashioned way.
The sperm, which seems to have sent Chip running. He didn't know she'd been trying to get pregnant on her own, so I get that it's shocking. But still, he's fled all the way back to L.A. to be on an eligible reunion. Don't mention any of this when we have dinner with Jane. Jasper looked intently at Liz.
You're not banging Darcy, are you?
Are you kidding?
I could swear he was giving off a territorial vibe.
Liz made an expression of distaste. You're imagining things. Anyway, I'm pretty sure he's going out with Chip's sister.
Is eligible the one where the dude kisses the girl on the cheek when he wants to kick her to the curb?
You don't need to pretend you're unfamiliar with it, Jasper. We watched the entire first season together. Jasper smiled then. And in spite of certain contraindications, Liz had always found his boyish smile irresistible.
We did, didn't we? He said. Okay, busted. But I haven't seen it since.
Liz smiled back at him. A likely story. Chapter 71. Liz hadn't yet left the parking lot of Skyline when her phone buzzed with an incoming call from Shane Williams.
A colleague of mine has clients who are very interested in your parents' house, he said. What's the soonest you'll be ready to show it?
How spruced up does it have to be? Liz asked. I've been working on the basement, but it's, you know, a large project.
What if you take the weekend to address the most pressing stuff, and they come over Monday?
Which meant 5 days, two of which were while Jasper was in town, to not only make the house look its finest, but also to break the news of the impending sale to her sisters and mother. Liz winced, then said, That seems doable.
Sometimes it's simplest just to rent a storage unit, load it up, and sort things later, Shane said. I'd also make fixing the water stain in the living room a priority.
I'm following up, Liz said. How does pricing work if the house isn't officially on the market yet?
This is what's known as a pocket listing, which in some cases can drive up offers. You're still asking the same amount, but it never enters the MLS. My gut tells me $1.1 million, if you and your parents are cool with that.
That sounds good. Where in Cincinnati, Liz wondered, were storage units located, and how much did they cost to rent? She had a vague memory of driving past some en route to her father's physical therapy appointments, but maybe she was imagining it. To Shane, she said, The people who are interested in the house, do they have kids?
I'll ask. Shane's voice was cheerful. But I assume so, because it's a perfect house for a family.
Chapter 72. Charlotte Lucas texted in the afternoon, asking Liz if she'd be free for a drink that evening. Because Liz already had plans to meet Jasper in the bar of the 21C Hotel at 9 o'clock, when he finished his reporting for the day, she suggested to Charlotte convening in the same place at 7. Prior to this outing, Liz went online to rent a 10x15 storage locker on East Kemper Road, and also arranged to rent a truck over the weekend. It was only when Liz and Charlotte were seated at a table, wine glasses in front of them, and Charlotte stated the opposite of what Liz had anticipated that Liz realized how confident she'd been that the trip to California would be a failure. Willie and I are moving in together, Charlotte said. I wanted you to hear it from me. You're moving in with Cousin Willie? Liz could not conceal her astonishment. He isn't my cousin. Charlotte seemed businesslike. If her demeanor wasn't ecstatic, neither was it at all dejected. But you hardly know each other. Charlotte shrugged. Living together should fix that pretty quickly. Have I ever told you how cool I think it is that you've stayed in Cincinnati on your own terms? You're this smart, attractive person with a high-powered job, and you didn't even have to leave town to make a life for yourself.
I'm not sure what you're trying to convince me of.
Liz dropped her voice. Did you sleep with him?
If you really want the answer, try not to look so grossed out. And yes, I know all about the prostitute who gave him a blowjob, if that's what you're planning to tell me next.
It hadn't occurred to Liz to divulge this bit of information. She forced her lips to relax from their curl of distaste. So you'll go out to California? I don't see how he could live in Cincinnati with his...
I'm moving there, Charlotte interrupted. Silicon Valley has great opportunities for someone with my resume. And in spite of my supposedly awesome life here, I'm ready for a new adventure.
Listen, Liz, I'm not asking for your permission. I'm just doing you the courtesy of telling you. Charlotte flagged a waiter who was passing by. Though he wasn't the same person who'd brought their drinks, she said, "We're ready for the check." Chapter 73. It wasn't yet 7:30 when Charlotte left the bar. The two women had spent less than 15 minutes together, so Liz texted Jasper to see if he'd be returning any earlier than 9 o'clock from his interviews. When Jasper didn't respond, she texted again saying she was already at the hotel and needed him to call the front desk and authorize them to give her a key to his room. Another 20 minutes passed without a reply, at which point Liz finished off the last of the second glass of wine she'd ordered and irritably walked to 7th Street, where she'd parked her father's car. Back on Grandin Road, as she pulled into the driveway of the Tudor, she could see through the large kitchen windows that her sisters and parents were eating dinner, a shrimp salad Liz herself had prepared. Rather than join them, and without deference to the two drinks she'd recently imbibed, Liz entered the house through the front door, dashed up to the third floor, changed into her running clothes, and hurried back out the front. She took off at a sprint and slowed only slightly when she reached Madison Road. So Jane was pregnant and Chip was no longer interested in her. Charlotte Lucas and Cousin Willie were a couple. Mr. and Mrs. Bennett were broke, as by extension were all four of Liz's sisters. She needed to extract herself, she thought. She needed to go back to New York. It crossed her mind to make her own reservation on Jasper's return flight, but with Jane leaving, Liz had no faith in her other family members' abilities to fend for themselves. She was passing the pharmacy and then the animal hospital and was deep in thought when someone said,
"Twice in one day. You're everywhere."
Liz blinked, and just a few feet away, coming toward her, she saw a tall, dark-haired man who also was running. He wore navy shorts, a plain gray T-shirt, and earbuds that he withdrew as he said,
"I wonder if I'm following you, or you're following me."
So preoccupied had Liz been that even though she recognized Darcy, she had trouble forming a coherent response. Finally, querulously, she said, "I'm not following you. I usually run in the morning." They both were by this point jogging in place, and Liz heard herself announce, "And anyway, Charlotte Lucas is moving to Palo Alto to live with my cousin Willie." Even in her agitated state, it occurred to Liz that Darcy might consider the divulgence a kind of village gossip on which he'd frown. Yet the animosity between them was also strangely liberating. Offending each other had never posed a hypothetical threat, but rather was the basis of their relationship. And in any case, his expression when he spoke was more pensive than judgmental. He said,
"I didn't realize they were a couple."
"They're not. At least they weren't. I mean, literally, less than 3 weeks ago, Willie tried to kiss me. After he left Cincinnati, he and Charlotte had a bunch of phone conversations. She went to Palo Alto for the weekend, and now, supposedly, they're in love. Which is insane, right?" After a few seconds' consideration, Darcy said,
"I'll turn around and run with you. I live near Rookwood Commons, so it's not out of my way.
I was never dating Willie, Liz said. He's my step-cousin, but still, it was so weird that he kissed me. And I'm not jealous of Charlotte. I'm only worried about how miserable she'll be as his girlfriend.
Darcy said in a level tone, though jealousy would be understandable, not of Willie, per se, but of Charlotte finding a partner she wants to be with.
Is she that desperate to have kids? Because they don't know each other at all.
They met when he was in Cincinnati?
Darcy glanced over, and Liz nodded. Then she went to visit him, and that's the sum total of their interactions. I've always thought of Charlotte as down-to-earth, but this is just batshit.
I take it you don't believe in love at first sight.
Does anyone over the age of 13? Do you?
I don't, no, Darcy said. But I don't rule out for others what I haven't experienced firsthand.
Oh, please, Liz said. Don't pretend to be more open-minded than thou. If they're so sure their destiny is to be together, why not date long distance for a few months? Or hell, Charlotte can move out there and get her own place.
She turned her head to look at Darcy.
By the way, you know how you think my family is a trashy mess? You haven't heard the least of it. Apparently, my dad has burned through all the money he inherited. He has huge bills from his time in the hospital. And no one except Jane and me has health insurance or a job. My mom was hoping Willie would become my boyfriend and bail us out of debt. Oh, and I think she's a compulsive shopper.
I'm sorry to hear all that. Darcy was somber.
Chip really dodged a bullet, huh?
They had reached the intersection of Madison Road and Observatory Avenue, and without discussion, they cut right onto Observatory. Liz didn't attempt to conceal her resentment as she added,
"Is he enjoying himself in L.A.?"
I haven't been in touch with him since he left. I'm under the impression that the show doesn't let people communicate with the outside world.
Darcy sounded as if he were discussing a subject no more fraught than the weather. Isn't the Christ ER furious with Chip? How can they not be?
I doubt they're happy.
Would you ditch your job like that?
I don't know that medicine has ever been the right fit for Chip. Good people can go into it for the wrong reasons.
Liz snorted. And Chip's such a good guy. It must be nice to get to walk all over people and then be let off the hook because of how sensitive and confused you are.
Darcy appeared unfazed. Speaking of moral paragons, he said, how's Jasper?
I'm not sure he liked Skyline as much as you do.
He's enlightened you, I take it, about his undergraduate transgressions?
Liz didn't want to admit that she and Jasper still hadn't talked about what had occurred at Stanford. Instead, she said, "You seem really fixated on something that happened a long time ago."
As a professional storyteller, you must admit it's a vivid tale.
Vivid? Liz thought uneasily. They were almost to Edwards Road, and she said, "You said you live near Rookwood Pavilion, right? I'm going this way." She gestured to the right, and as she did, she felt for the first time a peculiar awareness of the fact that she had just confided in Darcy. In Darcy. And he had listened, mostly with respect. The awareness was not entirely agreeable, and was perhaps part of why she said what she did before peeling away. She called, "Have a good night in the shithole that's Cincinnati." Chapter 74. At the Tudor, Ham and Lydia were in the driveway, walking toward Ham's navy SUV.
"Since when have you run twice a day?" Lydia said. "Are you anorexic?"
"Do I look anorexic?"
With both hands, Liz pinched her belly.
Though the flesh there was not inordinate, neither was it non-existent.
I like an evening run, Ham said. Think about life while the sun goes down.
You sound like an old man, Lydia said. Genially, Ham said,
Compared to you, I am an old man.
Lydia snickered.
Just so you know, that makes Liz an old woman.
Not that you'll get any argument from me.
You grew up in Seattle, right? Liz said to Ham. Where'd you go to high school?
Seriously? Lydia said.
As in other Midwestern cities, the question was considered both a local cliché and a method by which residents not so surreptitiously ascertained one another's social status.
If he's not from here, obviously I didn't mean it that way, Liz said.
I was just wondering because my boss at Mascara is from Seattle. Briefly, so briefly that Liz almost didn't notice, Ham and Lydia exchanged a look.
I grew up in the uncool burbs, Ham said,
and Lydia tugged on Ham's arm and said, We have to go.
Ham said to Liz, It seems right now isn't the moment, but someday soon I'll explain my complicated and tormented adolescence, when I'm not being physically pulled away by your sister.
Did you just have dinner with my parents? Liz asked.
Ham shook his head. Although I met them, and Jane and Mary, thumbs up all around.
Next time you should come earlier and eat with us.
Lydia said, Liz, sorry to break your heart, but Aunt Margot just called and told Mom that Charlotte Lucas is moving to California to live with Cousin Willie.
Liz hadn't expected the news to remain secret for long, but still, immediately upon leaving 21C, Charlotte must have given Willie the okay to spread the word. Ham clicked his key and the SUV made a pinging noise. He opened the passenger side door.
Ah, chivalry, Liz thought. And as Lydia climbed in, she said to Liz,
I guess if Willie's a chubby chaser, you really aren't anorexic.
Chapter 75. Liz's goal had been to sneak back upstairs for a shower, but she was intercepted in the entry hall by her mother, whose countenance reflected a kind of outraged relish.
I'll bet you're having second thoughts about Willie now, Mrs. Bennett said.
Actually not, Liz replied.
Charlotte won't have to work another day in her life.
Charlotte likes her job.
Mrs. Bennett pursed her lips. Well, she certainly didn't need to think long before giving notice to Procter & Gamble.
Chapter 76.
You need to tell me what happened at Stanford, Liz said to Jasper.
I get that you don't like to think about it, but not knowing is weirding me out.
She was back in the bar of 21C, and they were waiting for a salad for her and French fries to share. Though Liz still hadn't eaten, Jasper had ended up returning to the home of a squash coach for dinner. It was 9:30.
I'll tell you, Jasper said, but your buddy Darcy doesn't come out looking good.
All the better.
Jasper exhaled deeply.
It's spring of senior year, what should be the pinnacle of college, a time to chill with your friends before facing the real world. I'm taking creative writing with this woman who has a graduate fellowship. So, one, she's not a real professor, and two, she isn't even a fiction writer. She's a black poet named Trisha Randolph, and by the way, I don't think she ever published a book before or since, so God knows how she was teaching at Stanford. As my final assignment, I turn in a story about guys at a frat party. It's satire, and I totally mean to make these guys douchebags, but Trisha Randolph calls me into her office and says, Jasper, how do you think your female classmates will feel about your objectification of women?
Experiencing a prickle of uncertainty, Liz said,
Why did she ask that?
The main character and his friends are saying which girls they'd fuck, but again, it's satire. And yes, that is how guys in college talk. Don't kill the messenger.
Jasper's face twisted with bitterness.
Trisha Randolph says unless I rewrite it, it can't be workshopped. I say, fine, then it can't be workshopped.
But the story's already out there. Everyone in the class has a copy, and they make more copies for their friends.
It becomes this total samizdat phenomenon.
Liz could tell that Jasper had been transported back. He was far from her, Cincinnati, and his own adulthood.
When the story is an underground hit, Trisha Randolph is humiliated, he continued. She decides to seek revenge. Pretty soon, I'm sitting in front of the Judicial Affairs Board, and who's one of only three undergrads on it but good old Fitzwilliam Darcy. He's been tapped to be a student representative by the administration. I seriously think he's one of those dudes where his whole life he's gotten credit for being smart and moral for no reason other than he's tall. Anyway, it's 1997. Stanford and campuses everywhere are in the grip of political correctness bullshit. Trisha Randolph suddenly decides that she's offended by my story, not just as a woman, but as a black woman. And suddenly, I'm caught in the middle of a racial controversy, and I swear to you, the story had not one thing to do with skin color. But Darcy, who could have been the voice of reason, he was the only person on the board I actually knew, including faculty, he throws me under the bus. The next thing I know, I've been expelled.
Jasper's expression was both so sour and so expectant that it crossed Liz's mind that he hoped she'd challenge him, except that her specific presence hardly seemed to register. She said, "But what were the charges against you?"
"Some very vague violation of school policy. Obviously, the university was afraid Trisha Randolph would sue."
"It seems like she should just at the most have given you an F."
After she offered to let me rewrite the paper and I said no, I was fucked. It was double jeopardy.
Liz was fairly sure the situation in question wasn't double jeopardy, but this hardly seemed the moment to point it out. She said, "Did you attend graduation?"
He shook his head. "I got my degree on the condition that I left campus immediately."
How had Liz not known about this episode? She had met him a few months after its conclusion. She thought again of never having been introduced to anyone with whom he'd attended Stanford. After the food arrived, they spoke only intermittently, which was unusual for them. She was tired and suspected he was, too. Interviewing people, paying close attention, it always wore her out. As they rode the elevator upstairs, she said, "You're meeting the coach again for breakfast tomorrow?"
"Yeah, at 9:30 at a pancake place near his house."
In the hotel room, she used the bathroom first. And as she brushed her teeth, she wished, sex-wise, that she'd eaten fewer fries. But when she emerged from the bathroom, she found him sound asleep, still in his clothes. The TV was on, as were several lights. She didn't wake him. Instead, after turning off the lights and the television, she slipped under the covers, listening to his steady breathing. He hadn't offered to let her read his story from college, and if he had, she wouldn't have wanted to. In fact, as she turned on her side and closed her eyes, she very much hoped that no copies still existed. Chapter 77.
"You!"
Mrs. Bennett shouted as she hustled from the front door of the Tudor toward the Cadillac Liz was driving.
"You have some nerve, young lady, telling your sisters that Dad and I are selling this house just because you've decided it's time."
It was shortly after 8 a.m. Having set her phone alarm for 6 o'clock, Liz had sleepily turned off the ringer and not awakened for another hour and 45 minutes,
at which point sunlight was flooding Jasper's hotel room. As she'd driven along Columbia Parkway, she had rehearsed possible excuses for her whereabouts. To her right, the languid Ohio River had seemed to mock Liz's agitation. The moment she pulled into the driveway, Liz's fears were confirmed. She saw her mother, who wore a cream-colored satin bathrobe and slippers. Behind her mother was Jane. Looking, Liz noticed for the first time, rather curvy. Behind Jane was Mary, and behind Mary were Kitty and Lydia. Liz pressed her foot against the brake and turned off the engine. Surely the way to make a bad situation worse would be by running her mother over. As Liz opened the car door, her mother shouted, "This is not your decision. Do you understand that, Elizabeth? If and when the time comes, it will be your father and I who choose to sell the house." To Kitty, Liz said, "Why did you tell her?"
"I didn't tell her anything," Kitty retorted.
"It wasn't Kitty," Jane said.
"I thought Mom knew."
"You don't get to waltz in and tell us what to do."
Mrs. Bennett's face had become scarlet.
"Where am I supposed to live?"
Mary asked.
"You'll live here," Mrs. Bennett said. "You'll live just where you always have."
"Get on the internet and find an apartment, Mary," Liz said.
"It's 2013. That's what people do."
"I know you and Jane think you've been terribly helpful with your organic vegetables and your opinions about how we can all improve ourselves," Mrs. Bennett said. "But who do you think was making dinner for the last 20 years while you were enjoying yourselves in New York? Do you imagine I let your father and sisters go hungry?"
"We've been trying to make your life easier," Liz said.
"We never meant to step on your toes, Mom," Jane added. "We wanted to free up your time so you can focus on the Women's League luncheon."
"Everyone likes Mom's food better than yours," Kitty said to her older sisters. "Do you know how you can make my life easier?"
Mrs. Bennett, who was 3 inches shorter than Liz, drew herself up, scowling.
"You can stop meddling in matters that are none of your business."
It was at this point that Mr. Bennett, whose emergence from the tutor had gone unnoticed, cleared his throat.
"Lizzie's not wrong about the house, and you know it, Sally," he said. "We do need to sell. Girls, clear out your rooms and start looking for other living arrangements."
Mrs. Bennett looked aghast.
"You can't be serious."
"We don't have a choice," Mr. Bennett said. "Tempora mutantur, my dears."
Mrs. Bennett appeared to be gasping for breath.
"I thought one of the girls would eventually live in the house with her own family."
"Me," Lydia said. "I'm going to."
Mr. Bennett seemed defeated as he said,
"Then I suggest you find a leprechaun and abscond with his pot of gold."
Gently, Jane asked her sisters, "Have you guys ever thought of temping?"
"What do you care?" Lydia said to Jane. "You're about to skip town."
She looked at Liz.
"And you don't really live here either. You two are carpetbaggers."
Mrs. Bennett's tone was newly hopeful as she said,
"Jane, maybe you and Chip can buy the house."
An uncomfortable expression passed over Jane's face. Then she squared her shoulders.
"Chip and I have broken up," she said.
"Really?"
Mary said.
"You mean you're no longer going out with the guy who's shooting a dating show right now in California? I'm shocked."
"Oh, Jane,"
Mrs. Bennett sounded bereft.
"Now you'll never have children."
Chapter 78. In the basement, keeping in mind Shane's advice to skip a true reckoning in favor of efficiency, Liz shoved Christmas lights into a file cabinet and a badminton set into an old suitcase with a broken zipper. She vowed as she worked to immediately recycle the magazines she'd let accumulate in her apartment the minute she returned to New York. as well as to sort through her closet and donate to Goodwill everything she hadn't worn in the last year. She'd been in the basement for close to 2 hours and had encountered what she suspected was an extended family of spiders, energetic youngsters, weary parents, deceased great-aunts, when she heard someone descending the steps. Lydia appeared, carrying a bottle of coconut water that Liz imagined, until Lydia took a long swig from it, was for her.
"I can't believe you talked Dad into this," Lydia said. "You're being really selfish."
"It isn't my decision, Lydia. Do you have any idea how much it costs to maintain a house this size?
It isn't like there's a mortgage."
Rather than correcting her sister, Liz said, "How much do you think property taxes are?" Lydia shrugged.
"They're more than $20,000 a year. Let's say the boiler goes out. How much would you guess it costs to buy a new one?"
Lydia closed her eyes and made a snoring noise.
"I know you don't believe it, but getting a job and a place of your own will be the best thing that's ever happened to you," Liz said. "You'll feel so grown up and independent."
"You sound like a tampon commercial."
"Anyway, I'm moving in with Ham."
"And not chipping in on rent?"
"He owns his place."
"Do you really want to rely on a man to support you?"
"Spare me your feminist propaganda, Liz. You know, you should get Ham to help you down here. He's the most organized person I've ever met. He only uses one kind of hanger, and they all have to hang the same way."
"Great," Liz said. "Send him over."
Lydia took another sip of coconut water. "Kitty and Mary are talking about becoming roommates. Wouldn't that be hilarious?"
"It's not a bad idea.
I'd never live with Mary. She's so annoying."
"You do live with Mary," Liz said.
Lydia laughed. A certain preemptive aura of departure indicated that she was about to go back upstairs. What must it be like, Liz wondered, to observe another person in the midst of a major task that was no more her obligation than yours, and to feel not the slightest compulsion to assist? And Liz said,
"Do you even have a resume?"
Lydia grinned.
"Some of us are able to get by on our looks."
Chapter 79.
"When you finish today,"
Liz texted Jasper from the basement.
"Moving 1,000,000 pounds of junk from parents' house to storage locker. Can't wait to see you."
"At sports mall till 7-ish, Jasper texted back. "Still on for dinner with Jane and your friend?"
She hadn't formally canceled with Charlotte, Liz realized, though doing so didn't seem necessary.
"Just us and Jane now," she texted. "Let's meet 21C Lobby, 7:45.
Less than half an hour later, when she heard her name being called from the kitchen, there were a few seconds when she thought Jasper had ignored her prohibitions about visiting the tutor and come to rescue her, and she was touched.
"Down here,"
she called back, though even by then she knew it wasn't him.
"There's a rumor going around that you could use some help,"
Ham said as he entered the room.
"Really?"
she said.
"Wow, thanks."
He shrugged.
"Slow day at the office. What's our strategy here?"
Though Mary had accompanied Liz to pick up the rental truck and trailer, Liz had otherwise been feeling like the little red hen in the fable, planting and harvesting the wheat while the animals around her played. Now, at last, she had an ally, and if she weren't so sweaty, she'd have hugged him.
"The storage locker is about 10 minutes away," she said. "If you're really game, we could make the first trip now." This was what they did. Up the steep, unfinished basement stairs, through the kitchen and into the driveway, they carried suitcases and end tables and boxes full of decades-old files to the truck.
"You don't want to just dump this?"
Ham asked about a stack of faded Easter baskets, fake grass still nestled inside them,
when they'd made the first drop-off and were loading the trailer for the second time. I know it seems crazy, but if my mom asks if I got rid of anything, I want to be able to say no, Liz said. I mean, I have gotten rid of stuff since I've been home, but it was before today.
You sure you never got a law degree?
Ham said. They climbed into the trailer to stow the latest deposits, and as he hopped out, Ham said,
Random question. Do you think your parents are Republicans?
My dad, yes, with maybe a libertarian streak. My mom has the views of a Republican, but I'm not sure she votes. Why?
That was the impression I got from Lydia, but I was just wondering. Do you think your parents have any gay friends?
As Lydia may have mentioned, there's speculation that they might have a gay daughter.
Lydia did share that theory.
They had reached the basement again. Is your family conservative? Liz asked.
Very. My mom moved to Florida after my dad died to a retirement community, I'm pretty sure is a Tea Party training camp. Unfortunately, she and I aren't close.
You're not conservative?
I'd call myself a centrist.
I think of CrossFit being conservative. Is that wrong?
No, it's right. Although I'd say my box has a different vibe than some.
And you were in the military?
Yeah, the Army. I spent some time in Korea and did a tour in Afghanistan.
Wow, Mary said. I can see the floor in here. Liz hadn't realized her sister was in the vicinity and hoped Mary hadn't heard the recent comment about her. Want to give us a hand? Liz gestured toward a brown corduroy beanbag chair with a split seam through which small bits of polystyrene were spilling.
I'm sorry, Ham said, but that's definitely garbage. Seriously, Liz.
Of course it's garbage, Mary said. Did Liz tell you it's not? I don't want Mom to get pissed at me for throwing things out, Liz said.
Then I'll do it, Mary said. Where's the trash pile?
It's your lucky day, Liz said. You get the privilege of starting it. Chapter 80. At Boca, Jasper ordered a $75 bottle of wine. Especially since Jane wasn't drinking, Liz hoped he'd plan to let Sporty cover the bill. And after the sommelier had delivered it, Jasper said,
If you guys are the scullery maids at your house for the summer, who's making dinner tonight?
Liz, who didn't recall having used the words scullery maid with Jasper, said, Actually, Jane made them some chicken and cold soup.
Jasper grinned. God forbid they fend for themselves, right? Hey, Jane, Lizzie mentioned you're with child. Mazel tov.
Somberly, Jane said, Thank you.
How are you feeling?
All right, Jane said.
That's great. I swear Susan was puking her guts out from conception to delivery.
Liz could feel Jane glance at her, and it was with an air of overcompensatory cheer that Liz raised her glass. Bon appetit, she said. Please, Jasper, tell us more.
What Jasper really wanted to talk about, clearly, were his interviews with the squash players and coach, and he proceeded to do so over appetizers, oysters for him, beet salad for both Jane and Liz, entrees, pasta for Jane, scallops for Liz, filet for Jasper, and into dessert, creme brulee for Jasper and Jane, nothing for Liz.
Again, his long-windedness bothered Liz less than Jane's observation of it. Liz suspected the evening was reinforcing Jane's impression of Jasper as self-centered. He'd been describing the rather intense father of 11-year-old Cheng Zhou when Liz said, Did I tell you Jane's going to be the private yoga instructor for a family in Rhinebeck?
Oh, yeah?
Jasper swallowed a spoonful of creme brulee.
Who?
I went to college with one of them, Jane said.
So is it a real job or a pity thing?
Jesus, Jasper,
Liz said. And in a jovial tone, Jasper said,
Well, she is pregnant and single.
Yeah, on purpose, Liz said. And she could go back to her job in the city if she wanted. This is just a change of scenery.
I thought you two had a leave-no-man-behind deal, Jasper said.
Liz glared at him. Things have changed. And you know what? I'm a big girl. I can handle being in Cincinnati without Jane. Calmly, Jane said, I hope my friends haven't hired me out of pity, but maybe I'll never know. Turning toward Liz, she said, And of course, I'm very appreciative that Lizzie's staying here until our mom's lunch event.
Speaking of which, Jasper said, I trust Sally Bennett and the gals are still having lots of productive three martini meetings.
As he mimed pouring liquid into his mouth, Liz sensed that Jane, too, was bristling. Jasper, Jane said, tell us more about the squash players. Chapter 81 Jasper ordered another bottle of wine from room service, and after it had been delivered, along with two glasses and a fruit and cheese platter, he made a toast.
To Cincinnati, he said, which doesn't suck nearly as much as you'd led me to believe.
They were side by side on the bed, fully clothed on top of the covers, with the platter between them. Liz tapped her glass against his and said, Wow, don't give me a swelled head. But she was already in a better mood. She was relieved not only that the dinner was finished, but that Jasper had indeed paid for it.
What were you moving to a storage locker this afternoon? Jasper asked.
I was clearing out the basement so the house doesn't look like it should be condemned when the realtor shows it.
Your folks are selling their place?
Jasper reached for a slice of Gouda.
When my parents downsized, all I could think about was if it was the first step toward me feeding them creamed corn and changing their diapers.
Liz squinted at Jasper. Hadn't they discussed her family's financial problems? And then it occurred to her that the conversation she'd had about selling the tutor hadn't been with Jasper. It had been with Darcy. My parents aren't selling by choice, she said. They're deep in debt.
That's a bummer.
Jasper popped a strawberry between his lips and said while chewing,
Because I'd much rather you be an heiress.
Isn't that what Susan is for? Liz said.
Good point. Hey, I got an email from Brett Yankowitz saying if I write up my fly fishing proposal, he'll be more than happy to take a gander. Which is awesome, but after today I'm like, maybe I should write a book about squash prodigies instead. As backward as the Cincinnati airport is, it's still a hell of a lot easier to get to than Idaho.
Fly fishing is more romantic than squash. Liz said. Wouldn't you rather do your reporting standing in a beautiful stream instead of under fluorescent lights?
True.
Speaking of romance, theatrically, because she was incapable of not mocking herself when initiating sex, Liz winked at Jasper.
Come here, he said.
And he reached out with both arms to help her over the cheese platter. The kissing was fun. He was in a good mood, too. All of which made it surprising that once they were actually naked and recumbent, technical difficulties presented themselves. While not entirely flaccid, neither was the relevant part of Jasper's anatomy sufficiently stiff to move on to the next stage of activity. And the more directly Liz attempted to improve the situation, the less promising the outlook became. They were facing each other, and at last, Jasper lifted away Liz's hand.
I don't know what's going on, he said with frustration.
It's not a big deal, Liz said, while trying to shove from her mind the thought that the whole squash article had been a pretext for him to fly to Cincinnati so they could have sex. We'll try again later.
You don't want me to just get you off, do you?
Jasper said, which seemed a far less gallant question than, "Do you want me to get you off?" After a few seconds, she said, "Let's try in a little bit." She rolled over and reached for the remote control on the nightstand. They landed on a political talk show, and the longer they watched, the more incredulous Liz felt. After not seeing each other for almost 2 months, how could this happen? Just purely as a physiological matter, shouldn't he have been struggling not to finish too fast rather than to get started? "Do you and Susan have sex?" she asked. She hadn't planned to say this. The same moment the question had occurred to her, she'd uttered it.
"Are you kidding?" Jasper said. "Susan hates me."
"Does she still have that boyfriend?"
"Where's all this coming from?" Jasper said. "Yes, she and Bob are still together."
"I'm feeling confused about what just happened," Liz said. After a beat, Jasper said,
"Sorry for not being able to satisfy your insatiable sexual appetite."
"This is not about me being sexually insatiable." Liz sat up, folding her arms over her bare chest. "Are you sleeping with someone else?"
"The other woman is asking if there are other women? Please tell me you see the irony."
"Are you?"
"Liz, what the fuck?"
"That's not an answer." Jasper was looking up at the ceiling, not at her, and his tone had reverted to being sincere and conciliatory when he said,
"You're really important to me. The conversations we have, the way we talk, there's no one else I have that with."
She had been such a fool. Such a preposterous, unmitigated idiot. How could she have been this foolish? She said, "Who else are you sleeping with?" The expression on his face was oddly compassionate as he said,
"You really want me to tell you?"
"Yes."
"Fiona."
"The editorial assistant?" He nodded. Liz didn't know how old Fiona was, but definitely under 25. Also, red-haired and gorgeous. All this time, Liz had understood that her relationship with Jasper closely resembled a distasteful cliché. She hadn't understood that it actually was a separate, equally distasteful cliché. "Anyone else?" Liz asked. When she and Jasper made eye contact, he didn't do anything. He didn't nod again, or shake his head, or speak. Then he pulled her toward him, and she let him. She lay with her face pressed to the warm skin of his shoulder.
"You're like my life coach,"
he said softly, and she was pretty sure this was his ultimate compliment. So many years, her entire adulthood thus far wasted on this man. And she was more to blame than he was. Would extricating herself be difficult or not difficult? She still thought they might have sex, either later that night or the next morning before he flew back to New York. But they didn't, and he had to leave for the airport early in order to return his rental car. Chapter 82. KDB giving a speech in Houston on Thursday, August 29th, to National Society of Women in Finance. Read an unexpected email to Liz from Kathy DeBerg's publicist. 20 minutes available after for sit-down interview, assuming mention in your article of speech/organization. In theory, Mascara frowned on agreeing to conditions of coverage, but in practice, it happened constantly. Also, 20 minutes with Kathy DeBerg, modest as it might sound to a non-journalist, was enough of a coup that it would result in a full profile rather than a few remarks tucked into an article on a different subject. Thus, without checking in with her editor at Mascara, without doing further research on the event, Liz wrote back, "I definitely will attend." Chapter 83. I know this isn't your cup of tea, so thank you, Jane said. She and Liz stood in the backyard beneath the fungus-afflicted sycamore tree. Just, not to sound disrespectful, but we should leave for the airport 8 minutes from now, Liz said. Jane had invited Liz to join her as she bid a ceremonial farewell to the tutor, which Liz superstitiously thought but did not tell Jane increased the likelihood that the prospective buyers wouldn't like the house after all. Jane closed her eyes, took a deep breath, exhaled, then said, Liz didn't close her eyes and wondered if their parents or sisters were watching from a window. Thank you for sheltering our family all these years, Jane said. For keeping us warm in the winter and cool in the summer. Both claims, Liz thought, were rather generous, given the draftiness that kicked in around November and the erratic functionality of the third-floor air conditioning. And thank you for being a place where we celebrated holidays and played games and ate delicious meals. Even our challenges here have made our lives richer and deepened our ability to feel. Our family has been very lucky to live somewhere beautiful. At the mention of games, Liz had remembered a specific round of gin rummy she and Mary had played in the 80s, when Liz had gotten a perfect hand and ginned before she drew for the first time. In spite of herself, she felt genuine sadness. But it wouldn't have been honest to attribute the sadness entirely to the tutor's impending sale. It also was attached to her disappointment with Jasper, a disappointment that abruptly and retroactively colored the past. All those years growing up here, she'd unknowingly been headed toward a selfish, dishonest man. Jane said once more and opened her eyes. Do you want to add anything? Liz shook her head. I'm okay. I'll put your suitcase in the car while you say goodbye to everyone. Chapter 84. Mr. Bennett bid farewell to Jane indoors, but the female members of the family all followed her to the driveway, where Mrs. Bennett continued to offer miscellaneous advice, as if Jane were leaving for her freshman year of college. Get a little single-serve coffee maker so you're not dependent on those ladies in the morning, she called into Jane's unrolled window. They're only about $30. Mom, I don't drink coffee, Jane said, and from the driver's side, Liz said, we need to go so she doesn't miss her plane. I love you all, Jane said, and I'm only a phone call away. A nice hostess gift is a cheese board, Mrs. Bennett said. But if you get one that's bamboo, tell them not to put it in the dishwasher. Jane won't be their guest, Lydia said. She'll be their servant. Bye, Liz called. But she hadn't begun accelerating when entirely audibly Mrs. Bennett said to Kitty, I just wish Chip hadn't gone back to California. As Liz turned out of the driveway, she said to Jane, Did you decide what you're doing with your apartment after September 1st? I guess if I'm not going back, I should end my lease. But the idea of moving... Well, I shouldn't complain after you and Ham cleaned out the entire basement yesterday. You were heroic, Lizzie. You wouldn't say that if you saw the storage locker. Ham did his best, but it looks like the town dump. I have this fantasy of getting rid of almost everything I own and replacing it with minimalist baby gear. Just a car seat, some onesies, and some cloth diapers. Is there any such thing as minimalist baby gear? Liz asked as she made a left onto Torrance Parkway. In other news, I think maybe I'm finished with Jasper. What happened? Besides me finally seeing what's been in front of my face all along? Liz tried to smile, and without warning, tears came to her eyes. Oh, Lizzie, Jane said. I'm sorry. He was awful at dinner, Liz said. Don't you think? Sympathetically, gently, Jane said, "He was just being himself." Chapter 85. The grass moor, which was located on Madison Road, Liz passed it on her jogs, consisted of two handsome three-story cream-colored brick buildings with green awnings. The unit Liz and her parents viewed, which was for sale for $239,000, had three bedrooms, 2.5 bathrooms, two terraces, and a view of the fountain in the courtyard. For the duration of the tour, which was conducted by Shane, Mrs. Bennett wept, a fact that seemed to cause greater consternation for Shane than for Liz or her father. "Seriously," Liz said as the tour concluded, "getting this much space for this amount of money is incredible."
"My dear," Mr. Bennett said, "your coastal affectations are in imminent danger of becoming tedious. For comparison, I'd love to show you a unit down the street," Shane said, and Mrs. Bennett said,
"I don't have the energy." Liz said, "Mom, let's keep going a little longer. You have absolutely no idea what this is like for me," Mrs. Bennett said.
"Losing a house can be like losing a member of the family," Shane said. "Am I right, Mrs. Bennett?"
She looked at him vaguely. Liz had decided against mentioning Shane's race in advance of his meeting her mother, saying only that he'd been a Seven Hills classmate. Then, as if Shane hadn't spoken, Mrs. Bennett turned back to Liz. "I'm sure you can't understand now," Mrs. Bennett said. "But someday you'll learn what it's like to be treated with utter callousness by your own children." Chapter 86. In the early evening, Liz left for a run. It was a muggy day on which rain didn't seem impossible, and though she certainly hadn't timed her run in the hope of crossing paths with Fitzwilliam Darcy, their other encounter had happened a bit later, she was oddly unsurprised on reaching East Hill Avenue to spot a tall man in navy shorts and a red T-shirt.
"I thought you said you'd run in the morning," he said by way of greeting, and already, without any discussion, he had reversed direction and was keeping pace alongside her.
"I do," Liz replied. "Or I used to, with Jane, but now that... Actually, I took her to the airport earlier today. She's gone to stay with friends in the Hudson Valley."
"That's a very civilized way to spend the month of August."
"Oh, really? You think it's a scenic place to mend a broken heart?" After a pause, Darcy said,
"I get the impression you see Chip as some sort of cad for leaving town, but it's clear that he and your sister are at very different points in their lives."
"And you're the authority?"
"You can't argue that using a sperm donor is typical behavior for a woman hoping to enter a relationship."
"I assume you're aware she got pregnant before she and Chip met. Life doesn't always happen in the ideal order, but the proof that she wanted to be in a relationship is that she was in one."
"She seemed to have serious reservations."
"You hardly know my sister."
Darcy didn't refute the statement, and Liz added,
"So is Caroline Bingley still here, or is she gone back to L.A. too?"
"She's gone back to L.A.
"Are you devastated?"
Darcy was facing straight ahead as he said,
"Why would I be?"
"Aren't you and Caroline a couple?"
"What's led you to believe that?"
"Besides my powers of observation?"
"Your faith in those powers is misplaced. Caroline and I dated briefly when Chip and I were in medical school, but that was years ago."
"Not that I care, but it's obvious she still has a thing for you."
"I wonder if the man she's seeing in L.A. knows that."
"Is that what she tells you to make you jealous? And it looks like you're falling for it, too."
Darcy seemed amused.
"Yet you accuse me of presuming to understand more than I really do."
As they turned onto Observatory Avenue, Liz said, "And who's your love interest? There must be someone."
"You might not be aware of this, but surgeons work extremely long hours."
"And enjoy boasting about it, too, I hear. Okay, here's my guess. A waify, aristocratic investment banker slash social worker slash ballerina who lives in, I'll say Boston. Or maybe London. Just not Cincinnati, of course, because we all know about the subpar quality of Cincinnati women."
"What I said at the Lucases, and I hope you know that you're an exceptionally brazen eavesdropper, is that I don't want to be set up on blind dates at the whims of my supervisor's wives. That's hardly putting a moratorium on all Cincinnati women."
As they passed Menlo Avenue, Darcy added,
"I rarely date waifs, by the way. Or ballerinas. Though the category of waifs would seem to subsume the category of ballerinas. Aristocrats, investment bankers, and social workers I'm all fine with."
"When you and Caroline dated, why did you break up?"
"Why does any couple break up? We weren't compatible."
"Have you ever been married?"
"No. Have you?"
"No. But here's the thing," Liz said. "You're, pardon the word choice, very eligible. You don't have to feign modesty because I'm sure you know it. I personally would never go out with you, but you're tall, you went to fancy schools, and you're a doctor. To the general public, which has no idea what a condescending elitist you are, you're a catch. You could be married if you wanted. Or at least have a girlfriend, and don't give excuses about your schedule because people make time for what they want to make time for."
"Are you single right now?"
It was a strange question. Just a few days before, she'd have said no. "I am," she said, "but it's recent. Anyway, everyone knows it's completely different for a woman. You could stand on a street corner, announce you want a wife, and be engaged 15 minutes later. I have to convince people to overlook my rapidly approaching expiration date." But Liz did not feel in this moment like a dusty can of soup on the grocery store shelf. She felt practically gleeful. She was strong and healthy and not pregnant, sweating happily in her tank top and shorts, fleet in her turquoise and orange shoes. The gray clouds had dissipated without rain, and beside her was a man who, obnoxious though he might have been, didn't bore her in the slightest. She said, "When we get to Edwards, want to race up the hill?"
"You know those little dogs who get up in the faces of German shepherds and bark at them?" he said. "That's what you remind me of."
"Are you scared you'll lose?"
"Apparently, growing up with Title IX gave you quite a sense of self-esteem."
"All right, then," Liz said. "It's on." Though they were still 50 yards from Edwards Road, she began sprinting. She was flying up the sidewalk, past the houses and trees, the cars on Observatory Road a peripheral blur. No more than a few seconds had passed when he caught up to her, but they both were running too fast to speak. She simultaneously felt wild and breathless and like she was about to laugh. For a few more seconds, they were neck and neck until he pulled ahead. She was pushing herself as hard as she could, and turning onto Edwards, he was only a few feet in front of her, then more than a few, and before long they were separated by half a block. Still, she propelled herself forward. If she was to lose to Darcy, it wouldn't be by a centimeter more than necessary. He was waiting for her at the top of the hill, and she was gratified to see that he was still panting. She slowed down, staggering a little, incapable of speech. She rested both hands atop her head, then removed them and bent at the waist. After a minute, she heard him say,
"That was respectable."
She raised her torso, shaking her head. "Don't patronize me." Her limbs burned, her heart pounded. She was exhausted, possibly nauseated, but also giddy. As they faced each other, there was between them such a profusion of vitality that it was hard to know what to do with it. They kept making eye contact, looking away and making eye contact again. At last. Surely he was thinking something similar, and she was simply the one giving voice to the sentiment. She said, "Want to go to your place and have hate sex?" Darcy squinted.
"Is that a thing?"
The bravado filling Liz. It wasn't infinite. It could dissipate quickly. But while it still existed, she said grandly, "Of course it's a thing."
"Is it like fuck buddies?"
"This isn't a sociology class. A simple yes or no will do," she added. "It's similar, but without the buddy part."
"I take it you mean right now."
He didn't seem flustered or even all that surprised. "Yes," Liz said. "I mean now." This was his last chance to accept the offer, though she didn't plan to tell him so. But perhaps he sensed the door closing because he said,
"Okay, sure."
Chapter 87. Cincinnati was the city where Liz and Sax had made each other's acquaintance. In a rather festive cliché, she had lost her virginity to her prom date, whose name was Philip Haley, and she'd subsequently brought home her two college boyfriends for visits, during which surreptitious intra-tutor romps occurred. But all of that had been quite some time before. And Jasper's visit had, of course, been unexpectedly fruitless. As she followed Darcy through the main entrance of a bland three-story brick building and up to the second floor, she experienced a sense of mischief reminiscent of her youthful encounters. Outside his door, Darcy used the front of one running shoe to pry off the heel of the other, then repeated the gesture in reverse with his soft toes. And Liz did the same. Inside the apartment, nothing hung on the walls, and no rugs covered the hardwood floors. The living room